Tonight's presentation of our live podcast in New York City with Eric Stein and Johnny Mack is sponsored by True Car. When you're looking to buy a new car or a used car, you want to make sure you're getting real pricing on actual inventory. Unfortunately, a lot of times that's not the case. People configure cars online only to later find out that those cars aren't available. But with True Car, you get the real pricing on actual inventory. Not pricing just offered by True Car, but pricing offered by an actual dealer, and not just any dealer, a True Car certified dealer, a carefully curated network of dealers committed to transparency and offering you a competitive market price. With True Car, you can easily find the car that you want, and True Car will show you what other people in your area paid for that same car you're looking for. Now you'll know what a fair price is, so you can feel confident. Over 3 million cars have been sold to True Car users by the True Car certified dealer network, with over 13,000 True Car certified dealers nationwide. True Car users are more likely to enjoy a faster buying experience. No halting hex here when they connect with True Car certified dealers. And best of all, True Car users save an average of over $3,000 off of MSRP. So when you're ready to buy, visit True Car to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features are not available in all states. Here is the audio of our show. With any luck whatsoever tonight, we'll also have the video of tonight's show available on our YouTube channel at robhasawebsite.com/YouTube. Enjoy. Yeah, okay, go. All right, let's go. Coming to you live from the SVA Theater, it's Rob Has a Podcast. And now, here's the guy who's hoping the halting hex will not stop this live show. I'm Rob Cesternino. Hello, everybody. How you doing out there? Make some noise for all these people watching us live here as well tonight. We've got a great show. We had so much fun just now watching this live show. Was that the... We can kill the music, too. Was that the best Thursday night episode of Big Brother of the Year? Yes. Yeah, you'd be a little more enthusiastic. You don't have to patronize me, but... Come on. All right. First off, we got a great show. We've got a lot of great guests. First, let me bring out, I wanted them to be on the stage with me to start, but I guess they wanted their own applause to come in. Here's Taryn and Alex. Big ovation. There you go.
Held me back. Alex held me back, I promise. I wanted to go.
Yes,
I have a gift for you.
All right, Alex Kuhl has a prop.
Give you this. I think you might need it tonight.
What is it? Rob has a hex. Or is it Rob has Alex. Does this say?
Oh, right. Yeah. Well,
no, that's Alex.
Both technically true, I guess.
Okay. All right. And then, of course, we have with us two icons of Big Brother here with us to talk about everything. First, let's a warm welcome for the rock star dentist. Here is Johnny Mack.
Yeah.
Here he is.
Hello.
How you doing, buddy?
How you doing?
He has some props. He has a cauldron and a witch's hat for you listening to the podcast. What are those drinks that are in there?
It wouldn't be a podcast without some potion.
You need podcast potion. Okay. And now, here he is, making his great return to... Is this moonshine? What is this?
It's magic.
A urine sample?
It.
What is this? Here he is, making his long-awaited return to Rob Has a Podcast. Please give it up for America's playa, Eric Stein.
Rob, let's hope this goes better than my OTT podcast.
Yeah. Eric, you are like the Paul of the podcast, where you were sort of an underdog figure, then you got propped up, and then you were due for a fall, but maybe redemption.
Hurry, Rob. It's a live show. Take your shot.
All right. Well, anyway, I'm so excited to talk about this episode. First off, we had all of the drama going into everything with the use of the halting hex, trying to sell us that they weren't going to use the halting hex. And we have a new HOH in Josh. The crowd seemed pretty pumped up for that. Yeah? How are you doing, Eric? Okay?
I'm good. No, I'm good. I'm excited. I think this is a great episode.
Okay. We have a lot of stuff to talk about, and of course, that we are streaming live. We don't normally do this for our live shows, so you can use the hashtag RHAP. We'll be able to check in on that as we go along. So, all right. We witnessed history. The halting hex was used. Did it live up to expectation?
I think so. I was scared. I've never been scared watching an episode of Big Brother. That guy's... he's a creep.
The announcer guy?
Yeah. No. Well, the one from the beginning of the show or the one, like, doing the light thing? Because now he's... That's, like, some Exorcist-level stuff there now.
Yeah.
He's starting to get intimidating.
That is creepy.
The whole time I was just sitting there thinking, I was on this show. Like, what are we watching? It was amazing.
It's unrecognizable to you? Is that what you're saying?
It's just a whole special world out there now. I sometimes I'm sitting there and it's like, it's a soap opera now. There's good guys, there's bad guys, there's magic. Not much strategy anymore, but, you know, it's fun.
You know, that's interesting. And that was something that Mike Bloom and Liana and Melissa were touching on the podcast last night about how is this no longer a competition game show with strategy? Is this a soap opera? And this season certainly does feel that way. Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
It's a bad thing.
Bad thing.
Yeah. Well, you're asking the robot. I mean, what do you want from me?
But has it been? Are we not entertained? Is that not what we're here for?
I think we were plenty entertained before. I mean, Big Brother 8 is a great season. They obviously didn't have the budget for switching lights on and off, but you know.
Yeah. I mean, the crazy thing about this whole season to me is that somehow we have these two lunatics in Jess and Cody, and the rest of the house has normalized them.
Yeah.
Like, Jess and Cody are not good people. Yet, they are your overwhelming fan favorite. They've normalized Jody.
Yeah, this is like a whole new breed of underdog, where the captain of the football team, the head cheerleader, are now menaced by the nerds. Like,
yeah. And I think it's such an interesting question that was raised in this episode. The theme to me was, who is the bully and who is the bully being bullied?
I honestly think they all are, right? They're just all bullying each other. It's a big circle of bully.
It does seem as though there is like this battle for, no, I'm the one being bullied. You're the bully. You want to, like, paint the other person as the bully, and there's, like, no bully ownership happening at this point. Eric, I remember we had a podcast during Big Brother 15, and you had talked about the who's worse, the witches or the witch hunters. But to me, this is a similar thing of, like, who's worse here, the bullies or the people being bullied, allegedly?
You know, it's funny because Cody comes in with this catchphrase of victim noises, and that's what the season is now boiled down to. It's just like, who's the biggest victim? And then, you know, me. It's the most bizarre way to want to frame yourself inside of the house. I think they're looking for sympathy, but what they don't realize is they're not getting it on the outside. That's for sure.
Well, you feel like that it's people are playing for sympathy from the audience, that they are aware that this is a TV show and that they have to act this way because they see basically, and is this a reaction to what Josh does, and that they feel like that they all are doing their own version of Josh with the pots and pans and meatballs to Jess and Cody?
I think it's like the Raven syndrome. It's just, they just want more
that's
attention.
Different. Yeah.
I really honestly think that. I think it's just like, oh man, he's been victimized. Well, I'm going to be even more victimized then.
I've got a condition, y'all. I need more attention.
Yeah. Victim noises are getting louder and louder. Now they include like pots and pans and circus music.
Well, when it comes down to it, ultimately, bullies, aren't we all?
I guess so. Who is the bully and who is not? And like, are we the bullies that we're talking about what's happening on this show? And then we're calling them out, and then they get out of the house. They say, "Hey, you were bullying us when we were on TV. You were talking about what we were doing, so you're the bully."
Well, and it's really such an immediate turnaround. Josh is like, "You are the bully, you little man complex." Like, whoa, that's two very different sides of a coin here.
If everyone is a bully, is anybody a bully?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, Jessica could be the bully because she's in the haunting hex. I mean, that whole situation was so absurd tonight, where Paul goes out of his way that he's trying to dupe Jess into making this deal. And then ultimately, she doesn't go through with it. And then he became so indignant about the fact that she pulled out of this fake deal that he was making with her. I don't know who set it up there during the live show, but they're like, you weren't even going to honor the deal, Paul.
Is it possible that Paul's playing the best and the worst game at the same time?
It's interesting. I was thinking about this earlier today, that I think that there is a case to be made that Paul is on a trajectory to be the greatest reality star of all time. Because I think that in terms of, hear me out, I know you think I'm crazy, but in terms of, like, if you were going to, like, draw up, like, sort of like this, like, five-tool player of reality TV, in 2017, he's a guy who talks in catchphrases all the time and does nothing but make big moves and try to sell everything that production is putting out there. I mean, is there anything else that production could want in a player?
There's a reason that these people come back. There's a reason that Devon comes back and James come back and Paul come back, because they're willing to do whatever production wants.
Didn't you say this about Aika Wong, though?
Aika Wong is also, with all due respect to Paul, I would say that, you know, I don't know how many fans are saying that he is the best looking guy in the world. Aika Wong has that going for her also.
You just don't want her coming for your edges.
Yeah. Yeah. But I really think that Paul is almost exactly what a reality show would want, in that he's just all hashtags and big moves.
Yeah, he has boiled down his entire comedy to a two-syllable word. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, it's like he's become a caricature of his own self. Like, last year he had a character that was a pretty good character. Now he's come back with, like, the bullet points of his character.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the sequel. It's never as good as the original, but it's, they know the formula and they're going to keep banging it out. That's Paul.
It's true. He's figured out the little things that are just like, you know what, that's going to make it pop, and he's just going to keep rolling with that.
Do you guys know Paul in real life? Have you guys had an interaction with him?
I've never met Paul. Not once.
I'm the only person on the stage that's met Paul. That's kind of weird.
I interviewed him at the finale.
There you go.
Yeah. So in terms of Josh now has the HOH, is it Jess and Cody are on the block and this is a no doubter?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you have to think so. I mean, Mark was certainly a possibility, but it seems like, you know, based on feeds towards the end of the week, that Josh and Mark are on better terms and everybody hates Jess and Cody. That's something just the whole house can get behind.
Yeah. Now, Jess and Cody do have the option to potentially go into the temptation competition, and then one of them could win safety for the week, and then the other one could conceivably win veto and take the other person off. Eric, I know you look at all these twists with a very keen eye. Do you like the temptation competition because it removes the possibility of the back door?
Well, let's call a spade a spade. This is the keep Cody in the house competition, and they just couldn't understand that themselves because they're such bad players. I mean, this is by design another competition that he gets to play that he can win. They will be very physical competitions. Then they can't backdoor him, because even if he loses, he was going on the block anyway, and now he gets to play in the veto. It's like the week that Dan was in trouble on 14 and there was just miraculously, for the only time ever in the history of the show, a second veto competition. this is like Cody's second veto competition. It's just like, and you want to know what? When Cody inevitably goes out again in the next week or two, he's going to come back again.
Battle back too, right? Have we seen Cameron on the outside? Is he tweeting? I'm sorry, not Cameron. Ramsey. I'm Kevin now.
Yeah, you're calling me Ramsey's. We've seen Ramsey.
But they could also, I mean, they did this with Frank last season, where Frank was just not involved with the battle back. They could just restart battle back at any arbitrary point in time, right?
Yeah, sorry, Ramsey's.
Sorry, Ramsey's like, all right, you're good to go, Ramsey.
You already got 25K, so you don't need any more.
Yeah. So you think that that's definitely on the table, the Cody's inevitable victor's third time in the season?
Well, going with the soap opera theory of the show, it's kind of necessary for the plot. And I mean, to Paul's credit, it's kind of hard to play the game well when you have to use three HOHs to get the same person out. I mean, just like these guys have discussed that last year, Paul would have gone home on Victor's second and third evictions. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing. What you're going to get in three HOHs is Cody, Cody, and Cody instead of Cody, Jessica, and Mark. It's a big difference in the game. It makes it really hard to play.
Johnny Mac, tell me, do you like having this Cody and Jessica dynamic in the house?
Yeah, absolutely. I've never seen anyone on the show before that just stares. And it's the best thing ever. Like, usually they want, like, explosions. Cody's just like... And then everyone loves it. I love it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I saw the live feeds clip with the eggs and the eggshells. I love that.
What did he do?
That was the best. Well, Paul's like complaining that he's breaking the someone's breaking the eggshell. So Paul's just going crazy in the kitchen there. And then Cody hears it. He's like, Paul, it was me. It was me. And then he's like, oh, well, can I ask why? And he's like, yo, hold that thought, and just like walks out. And was never going to come back and answer Paul's question. Like, and he, I don't think he's like trying to do that to mess with Paul. I think he's just like, yeah, I don't really want to talk to this guy. So I'm going to walk out of the room.
Well, I think that Cody is very interesting because he's almost like the anti-Paul. And it's fun when you have like these people that are like going back to like a Johnny Fairplay and a Rupert that are sort of like the antithesis of each other. But you have Paul who's all hashtags and big moves. They're like, oh my God, you won't believe what just happened. There was a guy and he said this. And Cody is just like, yeah, whatever. And so he's almost like the bizarro reality star where the reality TV person just wants attention, attention, attention. Cody's like, no, I'm not doing that. I'm not giving you what you want.
Like, and this is all stupid.
Yeah. Yeah. Eric, do you feel like that? Is this an evolution?
Yeah, I feel like his misery is our joy. That's where it like translates. And you have to wonder, like, was this always the plan during the casting process, or once he got in there and was just so dry, they pivoted with this edit?
I really don't know. I remember, Taryn, when we did the cast preview, I was like, why is this guy on the show? And I believe to your credit, you said, no, he's crazy. He's a crazy person. He's like, did you catch what he said? I'm like, I don't get it. But it's weird that they've just taken this person who does this no-sell personality, and it's been a thing.
Yeah, it did seem like they were prepared for it, because right from the get-go, they've got Cody in the DR with crickets, and you have to think at this point he's in on it too. Like, they're like, oh no, it's great when you say nothing. So yeah, I think they probably did plan for it. They probably interviewed him and he was giving them not a lot, but they knew that there was a deep down craziness to him, so they were like, yeah, let's do it.
Going back to the veto ceremony tonight, so we saw Paul wins the veto, and then Whistlenut gave the most bizarre speech. It was almost like that he was, like, taken hostage, and they, like, prepared a statement for him. I, Whistlenut, would like you to use the veto, and I'm 100% healthy, and I'm safe.
Grammar
not being
tripped
treated
me up
well.
A few times.
Right. And then we get to Jessica, who says, world peace. And what did Cody say? Cody says, nothing. I have no speech. And Paul is like incredulous, like, oh my God, those guys have no respect for the institution of the veto ceremony. Like, since when is Paul such an establishment figure?
Paul is... has, I think, seen zero episodes of Big Brother, including his own season. Like, none.
Yeah.
Super and, fan.
But why is Paul so invested in that they, you know, undid this sacred veto ceremony?
It's all part of the cult leader mentality. I think it's just, it's the, this is the group think. Ooh, they're bad. They said bad things. They're the enemy. They're the enemy. It's all part of his strategy of isolating and dogpiling, I think.
Dogs were barking.
Yeah, I'm sure he could not care less that they didn't give a speech. It's all part of the shtick at this
also,
point.
Also, that's like supposed to be his moment, right? And then Elena was like, oh, that was really funny. And he was like, I don't know what's so funny about mocking the entire integrity of the game. Like, clearly he's bothered that they like usurped his spot to be like a flashy guy.
I want to ask you guys, in terms of what we saw in that big melee, Taryn, I saw all the updates during the week following that. Was that a faithful representation of how that all went down in the backyard with everybody, with everybody versus Jessica and Cody, or did they play a little fast and loose?
Well, I think the main thing they left out was that Paul and friends had a conversation beforehand where they agreed, let's try and push Cody's buttons as much as possible, get him to maybe even punch Mark in the face, or punch Josh in the face, and get him expelled, or get him to blow up so that Jessica won't use the hex on him. So it was a lot more premeditated than I think the edit let on, which made it seem like Jessica instigated it, which she did to some extent. They portrayed those series of events accurately, but they didn't show the planning beforehand, which is what a lot of people were upset about.
And they also didn't show that after Jessica and Cody went outside and Jessica's like, why are they still yelling when we're gone? Like, the group had turned on Mark at that point. They're just like, where's their friend now? You know?
Yeah, and Raven was really very active in that. Yeah, she was...
Woof, woof.
Yeah, the dogs were barking. Was that in the show that they referred to all of the minions as dogs?
Yeah, on yesterday's episode, they showed the Cody-Paul fight where Paul... You treat them like dogs. What? What are you... Get out of the room. Get out of the room.
And I think that that fits in with Paul. However you attack Paul, he sort of like then mocks the like where they called Paul a snake. Dominique referred to him as a snake. He shows up at the veto as dressed like a snake. Then if you tell Paul all of his minions are like dogs, then he'll tell everybody, hey, everybody bark like a dog that way. Then that proves that you're not dogs because you bark like a dog, because if we embrace it, then it doesn't stick. So that's always what his self-defense mechanism. They should really use it against him, where they should really come up with like more and more outrageous insults and see if they could potentially do it.
They're going to need to do something with that zombie suit.
Yeah.
That'd be a good thing to wear to like a first date, you know? Hey, this is kind of what I like to wear on Wednesdays or something.
If Josh ever turns his back on him, he can cover himself in marinara.
The competition tonight, you guys made this so much fun. If you were just watching that at home by yourself, I don't know if that was so much fun, but this crowd was so into watching the ball roll down the hill.
Yeah.
It was really like we were like on the PGA tour tonight. It was death-defying. How about Christmas trying to hit the ball? And she's like trying to figure out, like, I'm a person on crutches. How do I do that? I think it was Mike Bloom said, use your own zombie leg, Christmas. Leg. Yeah.
And then Julie telling her to pick it up.
Yeah, could we pick up the pace a little bit? Girl on crutches. Can you figure out how to hit putt on crutches? Yes. Why couldn't she just use her crutch to hit the ball?
I thought she was going to. It looked like she was lining up to, and then she was, no, I'm just like leaning on them.
Here's why. Because then on Sunday night when we get to, Brent, you seem upset. Like, why was Christmas allowed to putt the ball with her crutch?
So unfair.
That is so unfair.
Outside influence.
They're getting ahead of these things now. This is what we've done to Big Brother. Yeah. They should have also let Josh hit a meatball down the hill. That would have been fair. Okay. All right. Let me see what else from tonight. You know, Eric. Just a big picture in terms of this season. Do you feel like that this has been a good season?
It's been an interesting season. I mean, there's certainly a lot going on. I think, we're watching it through Paul's eyes. So that's the journey that we're experiencing right now. And it's an interesting one. I mean, is he going to ride it to the end like Derek? Or is he going to be Paulie, as you guys discuss every single podcast? And I think that...
There's a lot of shows to fill, sir.
Yeah. And honestly, I don't think we know the answer to that yet. I really think it's up in the air. I think he's doing, like, a pretty good job, but like, this is why I don't understand why CBS is so against All Stars. Could you imagine Paul telling Amanda and Vanessa and Derek and Frankie and this guy, oh, go out and bark like a dog? Like, then it's like the Johnny Mac soundboard effect. No.
All right, Johnny Mac, here's what I need.
Paul.
You need to go outside and you need to start barking in Cody's face.
Dude. No!
Eric, I wanted to get your take on the Josh of it all in terms of this idea as a strategy of a guy who is just going to, just this is just part of who he is, going to create loud disturbances in the house. Do you feel like that is, because again, it seems to have been embraced by people.
I mean, honestly, it makes him the perfect alliance member. He's an attack dog. He's a disruption. He's a distraction from what you're actually doing. And he's not a threat at all whatsoever. I would love to be aligned with Josh for that very reason. He'd do whatever you tell him to do, and then he'll take the fall for it, and he's going to.
He doesn't even think about it. Paul's just like, here, quick, do this, and then like he doesn't even have time to think about what he actually was told to do.
It's like someone like Jesse or like Russell Caruso, but like after having a lobotomy. Like,
yeah.
It just like sent out like,
I need you at a 30. All right, let me get my tutu on. One second.
I'm very interested to see how this HOH is going to play out. Do you think that at the end of this week, do you think that Josh's standing in the game is improved or is on the decline after this week?
It's probably on the decline. I mean, he's going to do what everyone wants him to do, but he's going to do it in a way that they're very annoyed with. And they're going to be like, we need Josh out of this house by now.
Yeah. I mean, in a week where it's just going to be, okay, we're finally going to get Jess and Cody out of the house. Is he going to be able to sort of like leave well enough alone, or is it going to turn into that he is going to antagonize them to the point that something else happens, whether Jess and Cody start to build up sympathy inside the house? Is that a possibility?
Well, I think it could be interesting, especially, you know, with him being HOH, like, I think, you know, he's one of the few people that really would prefer to see Cody go over Jess, even though Jess is probably better at the game. So I could see a scenario where Josh tries to mandate that, and everyone's like, no, dude, that's not good for the game. He's like, but I'm the head of household. Like, I'm down for that. Let's go that route.
This week has all the makings of neither one of them going home. First comes the Den of Temptation competition, which is military rifle shooting. Cody wins that. Easy.
They've been using that comp a lot recently.
Right. So then goes up Jess and Mark, right? One of them comes down in the veto. Then they say, who's guaranteed to send the other person home? They put up whoever they think the biggest pawn is in the house, that person goes home. That's the definite outcome of this week.
I wouldn't be mad at it.
So it's bad news for Raven fans, I guess.
It would be funny. Like, Paul has been trying to get Cody out of this house for so long, and after many, many attempts, it'll be Josh that finally seals. Like, Josh of all people. The guy that Cody would have eliminated had he not taken that safety apple.
Yeah. I feel like this is a weird season in that it's top heavy, where we have like sort of like four or five like big personalities at the top and then a bunch of people underneath. And I feel like what's bizarre about that is that in Big Brother, big personalities tend to go home. Right?
I think that we need more of the other personalities fleshed out. I mean, to go the survivor of it all, these are like the seasons that it was just all Coach, all Philip. You know, it's like too much at the top, and you don't really know what's going on underneath them. And I think we're starting to see them try to edit other characters. I mean, as you guys noted, Matt's finally speaking this week. And not to be lost in this episode, he very specifically, and I'm sure they do this intentionally, in the edit, gets the one line in the midst of all the craziness that is making him a good guy. They're trying to set up the next hero of the game.
He said, this is embarrassing.
Cut to Raven barking like a dog.
Ruh, ruh, mother effing, wah!
Honestly, having been on the show, that's basically the sentiment I felt every day for the last 10 years.
I'm surprised he didn't have a conversation like Jessica had with Cody. Like, this behavior is unacceptable. I have a life outside of this house.
Yeah. And,
yeah. I know you have two hearts, but that's not enough.
Also, how have Matt and Raven managed to not even get one scene on the show? They love showmances. They haven't even gotten one hug on the show. Like, how bad of a showmance must they be to not even be in the edited show as a showmance?
They're the third showmance. They're on the bottom tier of all the showmance.
The vestigial showmance, Matt and Raven. Nobody cares about them.
Yeah, we spend more time with, like, Whistle Nut and Alex, and that's not even really going anywhere.
She just hits him.
So Can we figure out what's going on here with the cat ears? I feel like we need a serial type podcast about the cat ears.
There weren't any actual words.
Yeah.
At least from what you could hear. So I was like,
man, you know,
are there still cat ears?
I think the headline in all this, they were on her head. Who cares where they were? Right now, they're on your face.
But in the live show, Jessica had the cat ears on her head. So there's multiple sets of cat ears?
Then
what the hell is the problem?
That was part of the controversy, is that Jessica brought cat ears because cat ears were her thing. And then Alex also had cat ears, and then she wore them all the time. And so Jess felt like she couldn't wear them.
Yeah. Oh, okay, it all makes sense now.
Yeah.
Eric, that's a good reason to vote someone out for $500,000.
I really thought Alex was going to emerge as a big time player in the season and a real fan favorite. But since the week that she's HOH, she has really just shrunk in terms of being a personality on the show, and that she's just like a, you know, solid, diehard Paul loyalist. I mean, where has it gone wrong for her?
I mean, how is this the same person that in the very first night is telling Cody to eat it, and now she is, you know, at Paul's every beck and call? It's very disappointing. But I will say this. There is one thing about Alex's game that I actually like. On a season like this, you always see the potential winners laughing in the background of the fights, right? When you see, like, in season 10, Keisha's birthday, you see Dan and Memphis sitting there giggling on the couch, and they're the only people who don't say anything. And in every single fight, it's Jason, Alex, and Kevin who are the people who are just sitting there laughing in the background and not involved. That's a very good sign, because on a season like this, the big people eventually go home and you're left with the leftovers. But hey, the leftovers is a good spot to be this time around.
Also a good show.
Yeah, give it up for the leftovers, right? Underappreciated. Johnny, can the power of veto be used as brass knuckles?
I mean, yeah, I think it's conceivable. You could totally fit your fingers in there. And it's pretty heavy, too. Like, I think it would do some damage there.
How many teeth would it knock out?
I don't know. It'd depend on the angle.
Okay.
If you went straight up and down, like, just the front and center. But if you went side to side, like Ariana Grande or something, you'd totally take them all out.
Topical.
You've given a lot of thought to this.
Yes.
Yeah.
I sat there for like 5 minutes. I was like,
thought about it.
If they're drawing it out of Cody, it might be a legitimate concern.
Let's talk a little bit about Kevin, and he's been an interesting figure. Adam Pock is clapping for Kevin. It's his new favorite. Hope. No, he's not so much favorite. Okay. Okay, not a new favorite. He's been a Kevin favorite the whole time.
We don't need to turn people against Kevin.
Come on. Anyway, so I think that Kevin has been interesting, certainly for one of these older players in the game, and that he has managed to avoid, I think, a lot of the pitfalls that we've seen before. Eric, have you been impressed with Kevin?
I have. I mean, I think he's one of the only true characters on the show this season, but it's a misconception that the older players don't do well. I mean, Karen, Rennie, Dick, Shelly, Jerry, they all made it into like the final five. So in fact, I don't think an older player has ever not done well on the show.
Glenn.
Yeah.
Hey.
As long as they,
and there's sort of like the preconceived notion that an older person is trusting and loyal, and that they're not going to scheme and scam on me. So it's actually like almost like a built-in way for him to play the game well. Sort of like when like a sweet Southern belle is in the game. It's just like he has the currency of like, well, it's Kevin. He's not going to do anything to me. So what I love about this is that he's actually playing hard, and he actually is scheming, and no one will ever see it coming.
Yeah, they literally, you just don't even think about it, really. There's no even reason for it to cross your mind. It's just like, he's just going to be there. It's a lot easier on Big Brother than Survivor, because Survivor, like the less physical people, still have to get over those first couple weeks of not getting voted out just for that reason, that they're not going to be good at any of the physical
like,
kind.
What if he pulls a Usual Suspects at the end of this, and he's like, I've actually seen every episode of the show.
Starts.
Wow.
Limping and then walking normally.
Yeah. Twist ending.
Could Kevin win?
Yes.
Yeah. Mm. Is that the best case scenario?
Yes. We're at the part of the season where it starts to become clear, like, well, these people are not winning. And normally it's obvious, like, who may win, but instead we just kind of have, like, whoever's left over this season.
Okay, so let's just get it down to the pool of available winners is who?
Well, definitely not winning. Cody, Jessica, Mark, Elena, Raven, probably not Alex, I don't think. Josh is probably not. So you're...
Christmas can't compete in a final HOH, so that's tough.
Right, so then you basically have left Matt, Kevin, Jason, Paul.
Matt, Kevin, Jason, Paul.
And I would actually say Christmas on an outside shot, because she's not going to really alienate anyone, so depending on who she's sitting next to.
She's too high. It's all those drugs.
I'd put Elena in there with a shot, yeah.
Okay.
I mean... I'd like to see her articulate the case of what she's done so far, the win, but you never know. Plenty of game left.
Look, I broke up with Mark for you guys. That's what I did to win. It was hard.
It's a tough sell. It's a tough sell.
All right. With the powers that you both have to see how these Big Brother things are going to play out, do you feel like that Paul is on a trajectory that the end is sooner than we might think?
Look into your cauldron and tell us.
Yeah.
It's tough because you could... Sure, someone else could... Yeah, there's...
What is this?
I don't know. I believe that's Cody in his costume from a couple weeks ago.
That's the upcoming curse.
Vetoed.
It's tough because, like, even if you nominated him, it'd be kind of difficult to get him out completely because he has potential to gather more votes than everyone else does because they all kind of feel safe and have never thought far enough ahead. Like, what would I do if I needed to gather votes? And he's probably way ahead of them because he spent like the whole first half of last season doing the same thing. So he's got way more experience at it.
I talked to people who played with Boston Rob and Derek, and I asked them, why did you never flip this? And it's always the same answer from all of these people. They all think they're in the final three. And the person who rocks the boat ends up as the target, and they end up out of the game. So they all are scared to make the move unless they are certain that they can do it. And if the person's playing well, you're not certain that you can flip it on them. So they're all thinking, well, if I just stay quiet, I'm in his final three, so I'll just make it right there. Somehow, it never occurs to them, they're not all in the final three. But then I ask them, so how do you figure that? And they're like, but we all thought it. So we didn't need to compare notes. We didn't need to say, oh, we're not all in the final three, because I knew in my heart of hearts, you guys aren't the real final three. I was really in Paul's final three. So that's how you keep control of a situation like this. So the only way that Paul's going to end up out is someone who either doesn't know the game well enough to be scared or is just like a reckless rogue player. And so that points to like, okay, who's just like, so crazy that they might do something like maybe like a Jason or a Kevin, something like that. Mm-hmm. It's going to take someone who is fearless in this situation, whether they're actually fearless or just don't know any better because they've never watched an episode before.
Kevin.
The situations that come by where you are solely in control are so few and far between. It's pretty much Final Four veto where you could make the only decision and then like the final HOH. But like that's really your only chance, like, if you know better, that you can get him out yourself.
But he's playing so hard. Like, yeah. The best position in the game is your ally as HOH, not yourself. He does not need all these competitions. And you can't micromanage everything. People are going to get resentful. Like, so they're definitely going to start turning on him. But that's still a question if someone's going to actually take the initiative to actually do something about it. Wanting him out and getting him out are two separate things.
Now, Johnny Mac, you played with Vanessa, who was a little bit of a micromanager also.
Yes.
Okay. So how was she able to get as far as she was, like being, trying to control everything and not running into these situations?
I think the main thing that Vanessa did was the deals week to week. She was a little different than Paul. Like, Paul has like a cult following. I never felt like Vanessa had like a cult following. Like, everyone was kind of okay with her, but no one was going to like jump out off a bridge for Vanessa, mm-hmm. you know, but she had everything set up strategically. Whereas Paul has just like, I don't know, he could probably open up some kind of a church somewhere.
Yeah. Friendship Church. We're going to be there. Come out this Sunday.
Yep.
So in going back to this idea of, this binary choice of, are you the Derek or are you the Paulie? How did Paulie get caught up last season?
Well, part of it...
Too many pies, I think.
Literally? Like in the graveyard? Those kind of pies? Yeah.
Sure. World well, peace.
We talked about it a little bit on the update this morning where it's like part of it was Paul. Part of it was Paul being told, look, Pauly has a bunch of different sub-alliances and you're just one of them. And if somebody can find that out, somebody who that person was sort of Natalie and then Bridget was the one who really got the information and relayed it to other people. If we have somebody that is the mole there, somebody like perhaps Kevin who can say to Jessica, you know what? Paul has a bunch of alliances and he's got these circles and these circles. She already has a pretty good clue. But if Kevin can go around and start saying, you know, just so you know, I had a secret alliance with Paul. I don't know if you thought you did. Then we could see some people start to be like, wait a minute, what is Paul doing? Maybe we should take him out. But with Josh's HOH, I don't know if it's happening anytime soon.
Eric, do you think that there's any way that Jess and Cody could sort of get out of this Brendan and Rachel season 12 zone where it's the whole house versus them? Like, is there any way that they could peel off a couple of allies to maybe work with them in this Paul resistance?
I don't really think so at this point, honestly, because there's no real incentive for the majority to do that. It will only hurt their standing in the game. I was thinking about this the other day, and I was like, who are the strategists? Who's going to take down Paul? And I realized I think they were Cameron, Megan, and Dominique. And it's a little bit of a problem for what's to come because we say, yeah, if Kevin did that, that would be great. But is he going to do that? You know, it's iffy. And I'd say the one inherent difference between Paul and Pauly is Paul socially is a lot more likable than Pauly was. So Pauly lost people because after a while, he was incredibly obnoxious and overbearing to them. I mean, they like Paul. So, you know, that gives him a lot more currency. I just don't think... you know, eventually I'd like to think that like grown adults have enough respect for themselves that they might think like, oh, maybe I should make my own decision at some point.
You know, one of the differences between Paul and Pauly socially is that Pauly would do things and expect people to follow him. He constantly abused his relationships, especially with Paul, where he was just like, no, you're going to do what I'm going to say.
How could you even say that about my game? I watch my brother and Derek.
Paul is the opposite, where he makes sure to explain in detail to his followers every single time they make a decision. This is why it's right. This is why we're in the right and we're doing the right thing. He doesn't expect them to follow. He convinces them to follow.
Taryn, they call that vet-splaining.
Yes, and it's very condescending to us watching, but the people who are there are very receptive to it.
Okay, I want to start to open this up to take some questions from you guys. I'm sure that you guys have a lot of questions. And then also, if you want to just check out questions from Twitter as well. You got one?
Yeah, sure. I've got questions.
Yeah.
That's why I had my phone out and I keep dropping it over here.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fire away.
Should I take questions from people that are here or should we let them ask?
Well, if you have a question ready to go.
All right. I like this question from Anessa. Does Paul realize the metagame?
Oh, if it's from Anessa, let Anessa ask the question.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. All right, here's Anessa. Come on down. I got the microphone over here.
Sorry to put you on the spot there.
Yeah. Okay. No, you don't have to go up on the stage. Just grab the microphone.
Oh. Okay. Does Paul realize the metagame that everybody likes Jessica, that she got the temptation, so does he think that the viewers aren't liking his antics?
So we talk so much about Big Brother being the underdog, the undercat, and you know, in a perfect world, you want to come into a Big Brother season, you want to be on the outs and part of that second wave of alliance that comes in. But Eric, as you know from watching 800 reality TV seasons, everybody always thinks that the audience is on their side.
Yeah, I mean, it's as we all know, the first rule is if you think you're the popular one, you're not. So that should be the first clue to anyone who's familiar with these things. But the thing that's really unusual here is, like you said at the beginning, they're not really your traditional underdogs. It's their own bad play and attitude that put them in the minority. So they're not really like they're outnumbered 10-2 because of their own actions. So it's not the same as, say, Jeff and Jordan, who were popular because they were opposing Shima and all these, like, you know, people that were really not popular. They were not popular, and that's how they ended up in the position they're in. So now it's left with, like, who are you supposed to be rooting for in this situation?
I also think that there is a halo effect that they feel like, oh, Paul is popular. Paul is a fan favorite. So if we're working with Paul, the audience is always going to be rooting for Paul no matter what.
I mean, 100%. I literally said if I was ever on a season with returning players, I would be like, in the DR, the first episode, like, hey, guys, I'm going to crawl up Jeff's butt and I'll see you in week 10. Wait till all of the twists are gone and then literally beg them to not let me speak until week 10. And then come out in week 10. So anyway, there I was in the backyard and just keep playing the game, because that is the only way you can play. If you go against who are the favorites, you go home. Like on Adam's season, for example, the first four people out were the people who outwardly said, I'm going after Rachel and Jeff. Big no-no. So you, if you can't beat them, you got to join them.
Now, Eric, would you rather crawl up a giant butt, or do you like the relationship that you have with butts as they stand right now?
Yeah.
I think another aspect of it is that, as we talked about, Paul, he hasn't really watched a lot of Big Brother. I don't think he understands why he was popular last season. He was an underdog, but he thinks he's popular because of his catchphrases and his crazy antics. So he thinks as long as he does more crazy antics, more catchphrases, he thinks he's killing it. He's like, look at all the drama I'm causing. People must be loving this. He doesn't understand that his behavior is different in the context of not being an underdog, in being the majority that's, you know, ganging up on the underdog.
Yeah, like watching 2 minutes of OTT or even Big Brother 18 might have fixed that.
Yes,
right?
Exactly.
All right. If you have questions, you should come over there where Matt is with the microphone. If you want to ask some more questions, you could just like here. Come on down. Come on down. Okay. All right. Do you have another question in the hopper?
Sure.
Well, answer one more question on your way down here.
Here's a question from Graham. I don't know if Graham's here, but I'm going to roll with it. Oh, Graham's here.
Okay, all right. But he's in the middle. It'll be hard for him to get out.
All right. Well, I'll give him a shout out then. Do you see any benefit in Jessica or Cody throwing the temptation competition and forcing Josh to nominate someone else?
Okay.
So if they throw the competition, then they're by default the third nominee, and then Josh has to put someone else on the block. What do you think? Any merit there?
I mean,
seems a little cute to me.
Yeah, cute.
My answer would be no. They're already prepared for, like, if one of them is already on the block, they have like pawns ready to go, and there's plenty of people willing to be pawns. Unfortunately,
it does get at least one of them into the veto competition, but then Christmas could, I guess, finally pull out her.
Yeah,
the squeaky wheel.
Oh yeah, Christmas is on the show.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, Jess and Cody do plan. What they plan on doing is what Cody said was, if it looks like I'm going to win, Jess, you throw it so that you'll be on the block and have a guaranteed shot at veto. So they want one of them to win and one of them to be on.
I totally forgot Christmas still had that advantage. I completely thought that it was played because there was so much talk that week of like, we're blindsiding Jess and Cody, and then we'll use that if they get to make sure that Cody can't play veto. There was so much talk that week, and it never came up again. I totally had forgotten that it was even a thing.
Yeah, what a great power to it. You can swap someone out of a competition. The other ones keep you safe for the rest of the game. Yeah. It's not really equitable.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, okay. And it's only someone who's randomly drawn, right? It can't be someone who's actually...
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
So weak.
Hi, Rob.
Hello.
Oh, my gosh. It's Marquesta from New York City.
Yes.
And I've been a patron of yours for a long time, so I'm just excited to see you. Welcome to NYC.
Thank you. Thank you.
I have to tell you, Josh is a freaking bully, and is pissing me off. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, whatever. But he's a bully, and I don't like it. And I really liked Paul initially on here, but you said it on the most recent broadcast, I think it was Friday, his ego is so big that he's turning everybody off. And I'm actually rooting for Jessica and Cody. Okay. Anybody else with me? So I want to know if you guys feel the same way. I know you don't always reveal everything, but are you rooting for Jessica and Cody? Or are you? They're the underdogs. I want them to win, frankly, because of Paul's big ego.
I wouldn't say that I root for Jessica and Cody. Like, I really, for me, it's hard to do what I do and have like a real favorite. Like, I try to root for the show to be interesting every week and not have really boring podcasts. So I like Paul being in the mix, and I like Jessica and Cody being in the mix. And I you know, root against the boring people for the most part. I mean, like, I like characters and people that are fun to watch on the show. So, but I can't say that I look at Jessica and Cody and I'm like, yes, come on, you can do it. I am probably less for Jess and Cody than a lot of people are right now, because I just think that, you know, that Taryn, I think you talked about this the other day, of that people want them to be these heroes. They're the avatars of the fan favorite as opposed to actually being the fan favorite. People only like them because they're going up against the establishment figure in Paul. I don't think that there's anything that's really redeemable about Jessica and Cody that we should be rooting for them other than the fact that they're the underdogs.
Well, I know there are going to be some people that I like them for their qualities. Yeah. There are right. some people, but I think what you're saying is that a lot of people are rooting for them because they're underdogs. And I think that's absolutely the case. And I don't think they're the most rootable underdogs we've seen on the show.
Because they're not sure. really underdogs. They're outnumbered. It's exactly. not the same thing.
Yeah. yeah. And just to go back to that first point about Josh being a bully, again, this is such a weird thing about this season, and I feel like that it's more and more getting into all of the reality shows that we talk about, that there is this like circle of bullying that's going on where, remember, Megan quit the game because she was being bullied by Cody and by Josh, and then Josh felt like then he was being bullied by Cody, and then Mark feels like that he's being bullied, and then they're saying, no, you're the bullies. So there's like this circular bully logic happening, and we don't know, you know, every person is simultaneously being bullied and also a bully.
Yeah. I'm rooting for Kevin. I'm
just... Schrodinger's bully.
Go humans.
Well, thank you, Rob.
Yeah.
I'm going to go, but thank you. And I agree. Paul is strategic and he's persuasive. So he's got me on that one.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And Paul very well could be the best game player in the house, which is a little bit of a low bar.
And, you know, as for my rooting interest, it doesn't matter what I do or say. People just will continue to tell me to stop standing Matt.
Yeah. And just that Taryn, you guys were talking the other day on one of the feed updates about how, well, I don't know how they're going to be able to portray Paul as being a rootable person anymore. I think he's done for after this. I also think that Paul is bulletproof in a lot of ways. I think he's Teflon. Nothing sticks to him. And I think that he probably, for a big percentage of the audience, a lot of the casuals, I don't think they're ever going to turn on Paul this season.
Well, I mean, I think what I was referring to was that last season there was a moment where they completely turned on Paulie and they buried him in the edit. And I thought that was going to be this episode. I think a lot of people thought that this was going to be this episode.
Nope.
And they didn't. They showed, again, they showed the events as they happened, but they didn't show the planning and they didn't show what they could have. They could have buried Paul if they wanted to. They decided not to. They still could in the following weeks if he continues his bad behavior. But I think he really dodged a bullet this week.
When we see a butterfly in the backyard, that's when we'll know that the tide is about to turn.
Yeah. Do you see any scenario where they would, the show would really start to paint Paul in a negative light?
I don't know. So was this the first time ever, like, I heard that so that whole fight, how it came about, he was trying to draw either, like, physical contact or self-evict out of Cody, which I've never seen before, and I don't really like that, because those are two rules that are just there for safety and, like, mental stability, and, like, trying to use that, it doesn't feel like it's part of the game, it's just kind of, like, something that we have to have there, but, like, going to that level, I don't know, it's... I think that's a first. Like, all the violent self-evicts have been just because, like, those people were just like that, and then Megan was just like, I need to leave.
Mm-hmm. We have seen people talk about this before, like, I'm going to get this person to punch me. We've never seen it be enacted in such a calculated way and, like, actually, like, a serious attempt at trying to make it happen, I think.
I mean, I think you guys are probably well aware of this, but if you actually provoke someone to do that, you're both actually thrown out. It's not just the punch.
Yeah, I really feel like Josh should not be allowed to take a frying pan and go up to somebody's head and bash a frying pan in their head to try to get a reaction out of them. And I'm surprised that they let that go on and, you know, try to provoke people with the frying pan repeatedly and make it such a key part of the show. I know people eat it up, but that's to me, just try. You're asking for trouble when that happens.
Yeah, I mean, I think part of it is that there's a little bit of precedent in terms of, like, Evil Dick obviously doing some of that. I don't think he did it as much as Josh is doing it, though, and I think that may be the difference here.
But I must say, lived with Dick, it was exceedingly ineffective. It had no purpose. Like, when you're inside the house playing, that had no bearing for even 1 millisecond on your strategy.
But that was what? People were sleeping, and then, hey, wake up, everybody!
The intention was to put the target on him,
right.
rather than his daughter, but it it wasn't going to work. Everyone was going to target her anyway. It was actually more reason to keep him because he was sinking his own game.
Right. But this, to me, is different where you have this, you know, big, like, brooding, sulking guy at a table, and you're going up to him with a pan right next to his head.
And amazing musical ability.
But Mark is probably like the only 6'6" giant on the planet who's capable of being bullied in that manner. Like, I don't understand. The whole dynamic is off. You're exactly what you're saying. It's just a circle because he's bullied people in the house himself. And then he gets bullied. And then Josh is bullied. And then Josh bullies people.
Just to check, how many people here have been bullied at some point in their life? Yeah, every single person. It's happened to every single person. So we all have been bullied.
And now Rob's bullying the audience?
Yeah, no, I'm not. We all have been bullied.
Yes, you have.
We all have. There have been other people that probably have all felt like at some point we were bullying them. It's just like we can't base every decision in our lives around this. Okay. So I got more questions? Okay. Just come on down. Whoever's closest to the microphone.
You can probably, like, line up.
Okay. Yeah, you can stand over there. That's fine. It's not a fire hazard. Okay. Peggy.
Okay, hi. My question is, now that we've seen all of the Temptations, do we think this was a good twist, bad twist? What do you think?
The Den of Temptation? Okay. I personally feel like the Den of Temptation, I think, is probably one of the better twists that they've done in the last couple of years, in that they have not just completely abandoned it after 3 weeks. They have more temptations coming into the house. I feel like that of the last probably 5 or 6 years, I think this is one of the more successful ones.
Yeah, I like the new version of it with this extra comp because there's like a lot of gambling involved with it, and that kind of... It's not traditional Big Brother, but it's still like, it's kind of, they finally got it right with trying to push it to another level.
And you know? Probably the worst we can say is the Big Brother takeover.
No, that's the fan favorite. Yeah.
It's not Battle of the Block. It's not, the care packages. So it's got to be better than that.
I would say I kind of wish they had like waited for invisibility cloak technology to catch up with like everything before going the Harry Potter route, though. We blew an opportunity here.
I mean, then the fact that we can tell that it's pretty good is that I can say Den of Temptation and there's no groaning in the audience. Yeah.
But I mean, I don't think they know the meaning of the word temptation. That's, it's just like, we give you a gift and then more good things happen to you.
There's apples on the walls, Eric. Come on.
Yeah.
What do you need?
In what regard was this a punishment for Jess and Cody?
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you get this miraculous power? You get your boyfriend back in the house and you get a competition that he's probably going to win to keep himself safe for
Paul, you're safe for 3 weeks. Ramsey's, oops, sorry.
But when Christmas ended up getting to pull somebody out of a veto competition, then there was a punishment of that. Cody and Jessica and Jason dressed like a frog.
You're right. That was a really balanced one.
You have to balance it out. Like,
story
boy,
checks out. Yeah.
It's like, I could take this useless power, but then there's also going to be this useless punishment unleashed.
I feel like we're judging this as like pretty good by like really low standards.
Yeah, low
like,
bar.
Really low bar.
It's
to clear
it's the
here.
Same standard as Paul is the greatest strategic mind in the house.
Yeah.
It's a low bar to clear.
The test will be when it comes back in week 12 and someone's like, I don't know if I want to take it because I don't want anything bad to happen to Paul.
Oh, thinker given. Are you sure you might not want to take it?
I think you just inadvertently predicted the future of the season. This is the old, oops, we're back in pairs again, Rachel and Jordan. Definitely the temptation will come back in week 12 when they need it most.
Okay.
Oh, hi. I wrote it down.
What's your name?
Tamara. Yes.
No one's really talking about Alex as a possible winner pick, but shouldn't we be? She's on the right side of the house. She's had strong allies like Jason and Paul, who's always in power, and he went out of his way this episode to protect her. So I feel like, isn't this a good place for her to be in? Alex.
Well, I don't think I could win the game.
Definitely not. I think Alex is, again, pretty well positioned, but the problem I have with Alex is I think that both Jason and Kevin are better positioned. Alex is a bit of a target to obviously Jessica and Cody, and a little bit to Mark and Elena, but Jason has been working on that actually. And another part of it is that she's a little bit controversial in the house. Some people love her, some people hate her. I don't like the position that she's put herself in terms of like
always obeying Paul, always being willing to put herself up on the block as a pawn, I think that's going to come back to bite her. And I think that she will go before Jason. And I think that's why I think Jason is in a better spot here.
Yeah, I kind of feel like it's better to be Paul's number two than his number one, because it's very easy to catch that stray bullet that's meant for Paul if you're Paul's number one. Like, take that Victoria spot. You don't need to Cody it up all day.
You're completely right. That's how she's going to go out of the game. She's going to be on the block. He's going to come down, and it's the next best thing.
Okay.
Hi, guys. I'm Matt.
Hi, Matt.
The Woj.
Yeah. Matt the Woj on Twitter. Anyway, something you might not have noticed is that, well, everybody was in the bedroom talking, and Kevin was there. He had shaving cream all over his face. Between wrapping his stomach with Saran wrap and shaving cream on his face, are you going to buy Kevin's book on health tips? World peace.
Is Kevin really having some major shift with this radical shaving cream on the face idea?
I still don't know how Kevin's hair works exactly. Is it buzzed on the side? But, like, what's going on in the back? Like, sometimes it's, like, it's over there, but then sometimes it's, like, slick back like Paul. I'm like, how does he do it?
So you're going to buy the book, is
what
you're
saying. I'm going to buy the book.
Kevin's great. We were talking about it earlier, and I was mentioning, I think my favorite moment on feeds all season was, it was a week or two ago, and Paul was like, you know, none of you guys would have lasted a second with Big Meech in the house. And Kevin's like, is he big? Like, you think some guy's going to come in here and beat everyone up? Like, bless him.
I used to know a guy named Big Meech. He was a loan shark. Come around looking for his money.
Okay. All right.
Hi, guys. Do you guys think Josh will reach Dustin level of HOH-itis this week?
Dustin level HOH-itis.
Needs to get that robe on.
Eric.
That's step one.
Crown.
Oh, no.
I think it's actually going to be like we're watching the same like material on repeat all week. I think it's just going to be more circus music and more everything right there.
Yeah.
That's 7 years bad luck.
Yeah.
Holding it together.
I don't think he's going to actually be an egomaniac. I think he's going to be an annoyance.
Do we reach a point where the meatball circus gets old? Do we reach a point where...
Like, yeah, 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, no. But look, this is a great focus group to watch an episode live here with you guys, because when... You guys are all excited to see it, but do we reach a point where in a couple of weeks he's doing it and it has not grown or shifted or adapted, and that people end up being just like totally turned off?
Well,
by
what
it?
If he just, you know, does slay? Like, what if he just switched? We were talking about this earlier with the other public domain options. Like, what if he just starts Ode to Joying It? Like, dot, 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 dot. Like, he's got some choices here. Doesn't have to stick to circus.
I mean, he, like, needs a new script writer, right? He's like, the material has gotten stale. It's really not good.
Yeah.
I think it depends on whether or not he becomes an underdog. If he's, like, the underdog that fights Paul, I think everyone will love the meatball
thing. They will.
Because everyone hated Paul's friendship and piss thing until Paul became the lovable underdog. Dog, and then everyone was like kind of enjoying it in an ironic way, which is what I think the meatball thing is doing right now.
Yeah, I think that if we're gonna like coach somebody to go into Big Brother 20, that I do think that it doesn't matter what these things are. It's really that there is like a Mad Libs element to sort of like coaching somebody. It's like we just take like a bunch of words and put them in a hat, and then that's just your thing. Like going back to Zach Rants, where it's like, you know, Fruit Loop Dingus. Okay, that's a thing. I mean, even Paul with friendship is good, pissed is bad, sketch, okay, that's a fool does this, and now we have the meatball and circus, just like completely unrelated ideas. We can just like go into the house, make that your thing, own it, yell it. And and people will eat it up.
Yeah, going back to my season, I mean, Jen Johnson comes in with T-shirts printed up with her catchphrase on it, and then has the audacity to tell us that she just thought of it.
She was ahead of her time. She really was a genius. Genius.
Jensa.
She was in Jensa. She knew.
Yeah, I mean, I think what Josh and most of the cast this season proves to us, I tweeted this a few weeks ago, but just because you have to take a psych exam does not mean you need to pass it. They are just getting a baseline of what your state of mind is. It doesn't need to be good.
Yeah, they just needed out to say, well, he took a psych exam. Yeah. Okay. Who's up next? Yes.
Hi, y'all. I'm Susie.
Hi, Susie.
So I've been having a lot of feelings about Jessica and Cody because I really like Jessica, but Cody scares me. And I think what I've realized is that Jessica is like that girl in high school that's really, really cool, but you kind of don't really realize that she's really cool because her boyfriend sucks. And then, like, her boyfriend's, like, absent for a week or something, or they break up, and then you realize she's so cool. So I'm wondering if there is a way for Jessica to escape the grip of her scary boyfriend and rise like the phoenix that I know she can be.
Okay, so does Jessica need to kick Cody to the curb to become the princess who was promised?
Yeah, I think the momentum is just going to have that happen eventually. She doesn't really have to do anything there.
Yeah, I wonder, what would the reaction have been if she would have let Cody go tonight? That you guys talked about during the week. You feel like that it would have been a bad thing for her because it would have been seen as Paul's move.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I would have been saying, move aside, Marcellus. Like, that was terrible.
Yeah.
And that if I were Paul, just like, I think she's going with it. Let's just get rid of her and get
exactly.
rid of
Exactly. She was going to go home. Yeah, if she
and
had
also,
not used it.
I mean, I think that they're actually just really fortunate that they're outnumbered. That's what's made them these big, rootable characters. I mean, I think in several other seasons, they would be more like Jeremy and Caitlin than they would be like Brendan and Rachel. Like, they would just be gone out, unliked, and mean. But now, they're popular, so good for them.
Hey, they were great in Twilight. I don't know what you're talking about.
All right, let's do a few more questions. And let me know if you got another couple of quick ones from Twitter. Yeah.
Hi, I'm Jason. So we've talked a lot, not Whistlenut. We've talked a lot about Paul. If he makes it to the end, is he the best? I want to know how close to Paul losing. How when is the closest time he can lose where it's the biggest fall from grace we've ever seen?
Like this week?
Well, now. Josh is HOH. He's not going to nominate Paul.
Yeah, I'm not sure I understand the question. So, how does Paul leave the house the most disgraced?
Yes.
Most explosions?
Yes.
All right. I mean, the beginning of jury.
Yeah, I mean, so he'll be on the jury no matter what. I think if he just comes off like a total bitter Betty about the whole thing. And we've also seen that Paul does not deal with adversity well. You know, he's like, high on the hog when everything is going his way. But he's also, I think, a poor sport when things are not going his way. Going back to when he got into it with Big Meech last season. So I think that there is a darker side to Paul. But I think that that would have to really be exposed and come out. I think that'd be where the biggest way that he comes away tarnished from this season.
Or what if he takes the wrong person to Final Two again?
Never cared. Didn't matter. I mean, that has not stuck with his legacy. That has really, that he has done a good job of not owning that. You don't think of Paul like, what we talk about Woo with Survivor all the time. And taking like, even like Cody Calafiore took the wrong person to the end. Paul has not let that define his, and again, he probably has much more to fall back on in terms of catchphrases and things that he did along the way. But that, I mean, when you think of Paul, I feel like that's maybe like the 10th thing that you think about.
Yeah, I could see Paul like taking Kevin over Raven and then losing to Kevin.
That'd Who cares? Know yeah. what? Whatever.
Yeah, I could see Kevin pulling the Rudy and like he wouldn't even have to know jurors' names and he'd still be voting for him. Like, we had a great summer together.
Yeah, remember
Eleanor,
that?
Eleanor, you were fantastic.
You'll come to the house. It'll be great. You'll sleep in my son's
room.
See
you Thanksgiving.
Yeah, I think Paul already delivered on his promise. Production got everything they wanted from Paul. One of the weird things about the season and what's giving this weird vibe is that he was miscast as the hero in the first place. He was just as the only returnee, he became the hero of the season, but he isn't a hero. So it made the whole rooting interest confusing.
Okay.
Hey, guys. I was wondering, since we saw, should we be worried about the OTEV competition not coming back since it had a gravestone in the HOH competition tonight?
Ooh.
Is OTEV dead?
I noticed that, but I also noticed the subtext said OTEV, the alliteration DJ. I forget what the dope DJ, right?
Yeah.
Maybe it's just that Casey will no longer be playing OTEV. Casey from Big Brother 11.
Okay. We'll see. Nicole, did you have a question? Come and ask a question. Ask a question. Everybody wants to get your take on Big Brother 19. Come on, ask a question.
This is why you get yelled at.
I just want to know if there's alcohol in the potion.
Yeah.
Nicole texted me earlier tonight. She's like, all right, have a drink waiting for me. Like, well, about that. We don't. So. Yeah, okay. Anything else from Twitter?
Yeah, yeah. This question came from... Well, it's really... A few people have different takes on this, and I'm curious like what your guys' takes are. Some people really liked... I know Taryn's in this camp really liked that this comp is a total crapshoot because you have to kind of game for it socially. But a lot of tweets about, like, why don't they just do a random number generator? So, like, what's your feeling? Like, do you prefer competitions that require skill, or do you like these crapshoots because people have to, like, work socially no matter who wins kind of thing?
I like it. It changes the game up because, like...
Okay.
Da-dun.
Uh-oh.
Da-dun.
Okay. Yeah, the golf was fun. The golf was fun. Okay. All right. Adam Pock is here, everybody. Come on. Let Adam Pock come say hi.
Hello, Rob.
Hello.
You know, usually, I need to stand for this, because usually when I come on the Rob show, I'm usually the funniest person. I'm not always funny, but today I need to be a little serious.
Oh, no.
I just got a text from my doctor, and apparently I have 17 different diseases, and I'm not going to live till the end of this podcast. So, I just started a GoFundMe page, and I really hope that everybody will donate money, because, I mean, my 17 hearts are not beating right, and I'm glad you're laughing. This is serious shit. But Rob's community has been semi-nice to me, so I figured, you know, your spare change in your pocket should be fine, so the GoFundMe is... Adam, his heart is dying. .com. So that's it. That's it. I have nothing more to say. Big brother, whatever. It is what it is. But oh my god, $5! Oh my god, I'm rich.
I'm sorry. Wait, for bullying you.
You gotta show us. You gotta show us your dance gifts.
I'll take the $5 and walk away. Thank you.
While Jillian sings Whitney Houston.
Okay. All right.
I hope that joke is worth $5.
It was to you.
I okay. promise you'll never see that again.
You gotta report that to IRS.
All right. Anything else from tonight's episode? Are you guys ready to go to the bar? Okay. All right. And Nicole mode is for everybody. Okay. All right. First off, what's the hashtag tonight? World peace.
Yeah. Meta world peace?
Good.
I'm down for world peace.
Hashtag world peace. All right, Taryn, what's coming up on the update? Do we have any updates? Do we have any updates from the feeds?
I mean,
the audience probably knows better than us.
Yeah,
I was glancing. Alex and Mark are fighting for no reason, apparently. And
okay. Do I need to cue the spoiler song for this?
I don't think so. Okay. And then, you know, I think Josh is going to pick the have-nots, and if so, he's going to definitely pick.
Oh wait, hold on,
Jody and Mark.
A spoiler.
Warning means that an actual
spoiler.
Who did that?
This country has been detected, and that protective action should be taken.
Okay.
It's much less impressive in person, I guess.
Yeah. Okay. So, Taryn, when's the next live update?
Tomorrow morning, hopefully at 10. Depends on how much time we have to get out of Podcast House. But we'll be live at Podcast House again. Hopefully no interruptions this time with the pots and pans. I think I cowered Matt enough by raising the pot to him.
Okay. Good stuff there. Eric Stein and Johnny Mac, fantastic job tonight.
Thanks.
What's about you? Now you look sad.
No, I feel great about this, but I feel like what we've learned from this is we should let the audience drink in the future.
Yeah. They're fine. You guys
bullying
fine.
The audience again?
Yeah. Okay, Johnny Mac, what's going on with you these days? What are you up to?
Just doing the dentist thing, you know, shucking teeth, stuff like that. And I've been making EDM music.
Whoa!
Yeah. I'm not good, but I've been doing it.
And Eric, what are you up to?
In the 30 times I've been on the podcast.
Eric, what
have
are your
I
plugs?
Ever once plugged anything.
What are your plugs? You have any good plugs?
No, I got nothing, Rob.
Okay. All right. Well, great. Such a pleasure to be here in person with you guys. Thanks, everybody, for coming out here.
Yeah.
Thank you to the SVA Theater for hosting us tonight. Special thanks to Angie Kantz, who did a lot of work behind the scenes making this all happen. Shout out to everybody else who came on out to see us in person. We very much appreciate you guys here in the audience. It was a great energy here tonight. And we will be back Sunday night. Also, Taryn is going to have the live show this Sunday night.
Taryn has a podcast.
Yeah. And you will be on East Coast time. All these East Coast people are going to be very happy to hear that.
I'm your savior.
Yes.
Yes.
And I'll be live with the Game of Thrones recap at 10:15 p.m. Eastern time on post-show recaps. All right? So have a great night, everybody. Thanks for watching. And we'll talk to you again soon. Take care, everybody. Bye.
Yeah.